Now, what happens to our personal information that we share online when we shuffle off this mortal coil? I'm sure it's something that most people don't even think about. Our digital afterlife. It's a fascinating subject and one which could end up being really important to people. There's a brilliant new book called All the Ghosts in the Machine, and psychologist Elaine Casket, the author, joins us now. Morning, Elaine. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Wow, this is an interesting subject, isn't it? Because we kind of don't even, I would imagine most people haven't given that second thought.
Absolutely. You know those little sort of like bits of string that you find on your jumper and you start pulling and you start pulling and you start pulling and before you know it, you don't have any jumper left.
Oh, it's you that's been pulling my jumper strings,
yes,
is it?
Yeah,
oh.
And I've had to pull the jumper a lot more. But it is one of those topics where you kind of see the headlines, it seems a bit niche, it seems like it might be something that doesn't affect you. Maybe you don't have a big social media presence, for example, and you think, oh, that's nothing to do with me, I don't need to worry about that. But the thing is that most people underestimate not just the sort of size and the scope and the variety of their digital footprint, but they also don't appreciate some of the implications.
Yeah.
The fact that it doesn't work the same as, you know, passing something on, you know, like a box of photographs, for example, to your family might be easy. Having them get access to the photographs that you stored online, it might be a lot harder. The stuff that you store online, you think about it as being forever, because everybody says, oh, you know, online's forever, the internet's forever.
Mm.
The internet is so not forever.
Yeah.
You know, hardware changes, software changes, companies fail, companies change their terms and conditions. And so for all those people out there digitizing their photographs and chucking away the originals, you
yeah.
might want to stop that now if
yeah.
you want to pass that down to future generations, because we still have Egyptian papyrus scrolls, but Facebook might not be around in 10 years' time.
There's some fascinating numbers that a study by Oxford researchers came up with, and that was that if Facebook continued to grow at its current rate, they could potentially have 4.9 billion dead members by the year 2100. And even if growth had stopped entirely last year, they'd be looking at about 1.4 billion dead members by 2100. And
absolutely.
That's an incredible
Carl
number.
Davis Research, the Oxford Internet Institute, I know Carl well, and you know that's some fantastic, really high-quality research, and those are numbers that come through really, really well-researched modeling. And you know, I've seen a lot of talk on the internet saying, oh, well, it doesn't matter, you know, Facebook will be gone in that time, just like MySpace. And that's the thing. See, that's the point, in a way, that we're entrusting so much of precious sentimental on Facebook and sometimes practical information and other kinds of channels, emails, you know, online accounts and so forth. And that's the point, that it could be gone within, you know, 5 years, kind of 10 years. And so all with a company like Facebook, which kind of really trades in living users, you know, that's where its income comes from, you know, the activity of living users. As the dead users, erstwhile users, start to tip over and become more numerous than living ones, the incentives that companies like Facebook would have to retain all of that information, those would start to change. Now, for right now, the fact that there are these kind of quite sentimentally rich, you know, memorial sites on Facebook is kind of actually an incentive for living users to stick with the site, even if they might otherwise want to leave, because it's essentially locking yourself out of the digital cemetery.
Wow.
If that person with that memorialized site doesn't have a legacy contact appointed, they didn't think to do that before they died. It's something you can do, but a lot of people, just like they don't make a will, they don't appoint a legacy contact or know it's there. But if somebody hasn't done that, and you think, all right, I'm going to deactivate my Facebook account, you find yourself locked out of the memorial garden or of the kind of digital cemetery, and you might not be able to get back in. So some people are kind of sick of the whole thing, post-Cambridge Analytica, all this sort of data sharing scandal stuff. They might want to go, but then they think, oh, gosh, but wait, I won't be able to access all these photographs, and they're the only photographs I have of that person.
That's,
you know, so there may be some short-term incentives for companies like Facebook to hang on to that data, and they might be able to utilize it for, you know, mining historical information to train up new AI or other things that might give them a benefit in the marketplace. But as it gets more and more dead people, fewer and fewer live people, maybe they'll jettison that. And then what will happen to your whatever information about you and your life you might want to access later yourself, or your kids to access, or your descendants to access? You know, it may be that a photograph, you know, is going to be much more persistent and stable than anything you put online now. We might all be victims of 21st century digital dark ages.
Yeah.
So we're entrusting a lot of precious stuff to the cloud, to the Facebook, whatever, thinking, oh, we'll be able to get that later. Well, you know, all of us who have audio mini discs or a floppy disk here on the top, that might not be true.
Well, yeah, indeed. Well, you mentioned legacy contacts there, and that's something that Facebook announced a while back. And I think that was probably down to the fact that they had people coming after them who were trying to access their loved ones' Facebook accounts, and they couldn't get at the data. And I think I'm right in saying here, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Elaine, that if you you designate this legacy contact, they can have access to your account after your death, and they can pin a post or accept friend requests, bizarrely, or update your profile, or I guess kill the account completely. But I don't think they have access to your photos or videos if they're not public content.
Absolutely. Nobody has access to your messages. Nobody has access to your messages or private content that you might have posted. So it's only kind of what was of it. But interestingly, Facebook just published a couple weeks ago, and you can look this up online or wherever, extended powers for legacy contacts to be moderators so they can edit things or selectively delete posts. And as anybody who's ever moderated any online forum knows, moderation isn't any joke, especially if you're dealing with lots of people and all this kind of stuff. And a legacy contact is just one person. It's just one mourner. And they might have feelings and agendas of their own. Maybe they want to delete posts from certain people, for example, for reasons of their own rather than what the person would have wanted. And so there's quite a lot of responsibility to be essentially looking after the cemetery, looking after the community of mourners, being a moderator. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. It puts more power back in the hands of somebody who actually knew the person, a legacy contact. But it's much more complicated than just being, for example, the executor of a physical estate. So you're absolutely right that a lot of people have a misunderstanding that the legacy contact, somebody that you appoint, is going to be able to kind of get in there and see all of the stuff, see the background messages, see the private stuff. That's not true. It's only if somebody actually has login details and is essentially kind of impersonating the dead person to log in, which has all sorts of problems of its own, that they'll be able to access everything. And so that's something that gives people pause when they think, oh, should I give passwords to my email accounts, to my social media stuff, to my computer, to my loved ones so they can take care of stuff after I'm gone? Well, that's something you can do if you have absolutely no secrets and nothing that's ambiguous and nothing that might hurt somebody after you're gone. But, you know, when you think of giving somebody your password to your device or your accounts, you are giving it them everything.
Yeah. Okay, Elaine, is it not an obvious thing to say that if you want to do that, and it's a good idea to do it, that all you need to actually do is give that information in your will, in a kind of sealed envelope? My friend's done it on a USB stick. He's hoping it's going to work when he's passed away, which I think is a little dodgy, but there we are. But the theory's there. You could put it in a sealed envelope which says, only to be opened in event of my death, and there are your passwords.
Yeah, and if you trust your executor to carry that out, because that part of it, you know, like if it's a USB stick, it's physical in a way, it's tangible. So in the UK, at least, you can actually say in your will, I want so-and-so to receive this USB stick, these are my instructions. Now, as has always been the case, it's kind of at the discretion of the executor, you know, to, you know, kind of carry out the deceased person's wishes. And that's why you should only ever appoint, digitally or otherwise, somebody that you really trust to carry out your wishes as you've written them down.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's always a good idea to express your wishes. It's always a good idea to identify trusted persons. But where it comes to the digital side of things, you know, again, it's something that you just can't just nominate somebody without thinking about it too much or without letting them know, because it's a complex job. And if it involves an ongoing social media account, because you've said, I'd like my Facebook profile, for example, to stay up as a memorial site, and now that the legacy contacts have these moderation powers, there's a lot to look after. I interviewed one woman for my book who unfortunately had lost her husband, her best friend, her daughter, and her son-in-law, all within the space of something like a decade.
My goodness.
And she somehow found herself the administrator of all of these sites. And you can imagine at death anniversary times or holiday times, they were very active sites because the community of mourners was very large in their small Ohio town in the United States.
Right.
And it was exhausting for this lady. It was like a full-time job looking after all of these memorials. And she felt a kind of obligation or guilt that she needed to carry on doing it for the sake of the other mourners. But it was really, really tough for her. So, you know, it's something that's an important job. It's something that could be quite an extensive, long-lived job, or as long-lived as Facebook, for example, might exist. But, you know, I think that you know, we really need to think about, and companies need to think about, Facebook at least is trying to be an industry leader by sort of trying to work out what to do about the data of the deceased. And they're kind of one of the only games in town that's actually doing that, whether it's for their own kind of benefit or ours. But, you know, what ends up happening is they end up writing the rule book about what should happen or what's good for us or not, or how we should be mourning or how should we be grieving or how we should be honoring the deceased on their side or whatever. And grief's a really individual thing. Everybody wants and needs different things. And I'm not, you know, it's kind of funny that we found ourselves in a position where big technology companies are telling us what should we should be accessing and how we should be feeling and how we should be honoring our loved ones. And, you know, there's no legal system in the world that's really successfully getting ahead of the big tech corporations to sort of say, no, we're going to tell you, you know, what the status of the data of the dead is. But, you know, the digital footprint's pretty wide. For those of, you know, your listeners who don't have social media accounts or maybe who don't even, you know, use email very much, there's still your search history. And boy, the search history, the stuff you look up at 2 in the morning, when you're scared or worried about thinking about whatever, the stuff that you're into, the stuff you might not want somebody to know, it's all there in your search history. If your loved ones inherit a laptop, they might get a whole different vision of you that's quite complicated, you know. And so these things are part of your digital footprint too.
I'm worrying now about that poor lady you were talking about. What happens when she dies? Does she have to then pass all that stuff on to somebody else? I mean,
she's got a USB stick that she's passing on to her. You know, like you mentioned, the USB stick that may or may not work. You know, she's passing that on to her daughter's sons or her grandsons. So that profile is unmemorialized. So she still has the login details to her daughter's account. And this is one of the things that Facebook has changed. They used to memorialize accounts as soon as they found out reliably from wherever source that the person was dead. Now they're only accepting requests again from family and friends. And at that point, nobody can ever log into the account again. Nobody can ever access the messages. But at least the last time I talked to this lady, the account was still active. You could still log into it. She says, oh, yes, you know, I'd be happy for my grandsons to kind of have access to all of this information. But it's a pretty, you know, you can find stuff that comforts you there, or you can find stuff that opens up a can of worms.
Absolutely.
And knowing more and seeing more doesn't always equate to feeling better, you know? And especially if a death's been problematic, or if there's been a suicide, a homicide, something troubling, something mysterious medically or whatever, a lot of times people go searching through the digital archive hoping for answers, and they might only find more questions. And that's something that can kind of keep the wounds open in grief.
Totally understand. And then, of course, we come to what I guess is the definition of a digital asset, so that they may be properly categorized, I guess, by property laws or contractual laws or whatever. And I'm thinking here of Apple, who, you know, a user could spend 10 years and spend tens of thousands of pounds acquiring films and music and all the rest of it that is their collection that they would have physically had at home before. But now, of course, they're just all on iTunes. And Apple have made it very clear.
They have the license to play it.
Exactly. Apple have made it very clear. You don't own this when you die.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, there was that famous case. Bruce Willis got really up in arms about that a few years ago and sort of did a lawsuit in Apple against Apple, I believe, in the States. And, you know, and I'm not sure that the policies haven't changed since then. This is the thing, you know, oftentimes you don't own if you have any doubt about how much big tech essentially owns us, you just need to look at what happens to our data when we die and whether we really own it. And then it becomes very clear the extent.
Yeah, absolutely. The inventor of the World Wide Web, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, says that we've lost our way and the web that we've now got is not the web that he intended. He's still with us. We've actually lost her on the line now. So not only is digital data goes missing when you don't want it to, it also goes missing on a phone call. Fascinating. Before the break, we were talking to Elaine Casket about her books, All the Ghosts in the Machine. And I was just, welcome back, by the way, Elaine. we proved how fallible digital data is right there, actually, in a practical demonstration.
Absolutely. My suspicion is the big tech overlords thought the conversation was hotting up a little bit too much to their liking, and they thought they'd pull the plug.
Well, it disappeared just as I was explaining that Sir Tim Berners-Lee, who invented the World Wide Web, argues that we've lost our way, and he says it's not the web that he intended, which is why he's pushing for a new kind of web where control is wrested back from big tech. That's a bit of a pipe dream, I would have thought.
decentralized web. Well, he's creating technology, solid, to be able to try to move things in this direction. And I think a lot of people are really sympathetic to that.
Yeah.
And I think that what happens to your data when you die and the way that they still control you after you die is a really good argument for the decentralized web. At least it would take us back in a direction where it would be a little bit clearer that we have control or ownership of things that we can then pass on. And so it's so hard to classify digital stuff and whether you can leave it under laws of succession and all this kind of stuff. But if we had a decentralized web where we were able to kind of more clearly maintain control and ownership of our data, it would simplify things a lot more. We wouldn't have as much high control intermediary intervention from big tech companies that are like iTunes, like, you know, Amazon, like, you know, Google and Facebook that are kind of keeping control of our data. So I'm from the death in the digital perspective, I'm pretty sympathetic to where Tim Berners-Lee is coming from, and I can completely get it, seeing the pain that it causes people when there isn't any control over data when someone dies.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the book is really, really interesting. It's called All the Ghosts in the Machine, Illusions of Immortality in the Digital Age. I'm just thinking to my own life there, I've got probably 4,000 old vinyl records stored away somewhere, and I imagine the person who's got to sort that lot out when I die would wish I had put them all on iTunes.
Well, I don't know. Just be real. You know, the thing is that, yeah, absolutely. I think that it's just about possible that those things might be playable in 10 years and
yeah.
stuff on iTunes might not be available to somebody. So if I were you, I'd hang on to them. Keep them storage going.
Yeah. Been a pleasure to talk to you today, Elaine. Lovely.
Likewise.
Have a great day. You take care.
You as well.
Cheers.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.